Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
COVID-19 is a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, on pretty much every level, first and foremost for the people that are being affected personally by this, and then the outflow of everything, whether it be work, being able to spend time with family, and then obviously what we talk about on this show, while far less important than the most dire aspects of this, the pro wrestling world and the pro wrestling world in Japan is certainly being affected. And right as we're about to record, some pretty significant news, while not exactly unexpected, still very noteworthy to the interest of you and I and our listeners, I would say, that news just broke.
Yeah, very, very painful here. And it did just break as we record this show. And I hate to timestamp it or anything, but it is 4:20 in the morning, Eastern Daylight Time, and word has just come down that New Japan has canceled the Best of the Super Juniors, originally scheduled from May 12th to June 6th. That is now out of the way. That comes on the heels of DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro, and all related companies under that umbrella canceling shows out to June 23rd. From May 23rd, that's when they originally had those shows scheduled. So those two shoes dropped very early this morning, and forget about those shoes dropping. Somebody has got them on, and they are just stomping the living shit out of us as if it is Joe Pesci in, not Reservoir Dogs, although there was any stomping in that movie too. There probably was, but in Goodfellas, the circle of stomps that took place and Tommy, everybody just laying shoes on people. That is what this disease is doing to Japanese wrestling, as well as all of our lives right now.
Yeah, I don't know much about movies, but it sounds like it's a Garvin Stomp type scenario happening right now to the pro wrestling world. And yes, the announcement came out from New Japan this morning. The show's May 12th through June 6th canceled. They did a reference again, as they did last time. The press release or the post is pretty boilerplate from the last batch of shows they canceled. They did say that they are continuing to explore the possibility of presenting matches without fans in attendance if staff and wrestler health and safety can be protected to the highest possible standard. So that will be something to monitor. We, by the time this next batch of cancellations runs through, as we said, June 6th, New Japan will be about 3.5 months into their pause, not running shows of any kind. I think it's also noteworthy that we've heard nothing at all on the Stardom front as of late in terms of them running any no fans shows. So it certainly appears while much of the Japanese wrestling world continues to run shows in a no fans empty arena manner, that the Bushiroad policy as of now still seems to be holding true, which is, you know, no empty arena show. So we'll see, because at a certain point, I mean, I guess if this is what they're doing, this is what they're doing. But it will be interesting to see how long they hold out from doing what every other company is doing. They should certainly be praised for doing what they have so far. And by all reports, they've taken care of the office staff and the wrestlers very well. But, you know, so at some point, something is going to break one way or the other.
Yeah, I know some people have been throwing some bouquets recently in ROH and Sinclair Broadcasting's direction. And, you know, deservedly so, if you want to look at it in that way. They've lost their entire year. This was going to be a comeback year for them. They had a lot on the line. We've talked about it at length earlier on this year about what Ring of Honor could do and may do and would do this year. And unfortunately, all of that's out the window. And the thing is, you know, they've canceled their shows in June, but there was only three of them when it came.
Yeah,
to
and those were the last shows that were on the schedule. I'll praise through, by the way, for their very narrow lens. I will praise how they've handled this situation with Ring of Honor. I am not going to go down the road of praising Sinclair Broadcasting Group in any way, shape, or form. But that editorializing out the window, continue.
Well, that's, yeah, with whoever is pulling those strings when it comes to Ring of Honor specifically, and I guess they actually haven't gone through too many cuts, so okay, I guess.
Yeah, you know, they're taking care of the wrestlers and the staff very well, and I will give them credit for that. Non-contracted wrestlers who were just on a per-appearance basis for the shows that had been planned, from all reports, have been getting paid, even though for some of them they had never actually worked for the company before. These were going to be their debuts. They still have gotten paid for those shows. So when you look at what's been going on throughout the pro wrestling landscape, you do have to give Ring of Honor a lot of credit at this point for how they've handled the whole situation.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, though, like you mentioned, they only had those three shows, and that's it on the ledger. New Japan's had a year's worth of shows and a whole bunch of planning, obviously, that was going into all this stuff, and it doesn't make them any different than any other wrestling company for the most part, but they have lost a lot. So we'll just have to see how it all goes. And look, contraction is going to be interesting. The indie scene, much like it is in North America, it's going to be just as interesting overseas, because if this continues on for a while, we keep getting outbreaks over it. Look, they're not going to shutter Stardom or anything like that, but saying, hey, we're going to fold Stardom for the next X amount of months, we're going to honor this, but do this and cut back and tighten the belt. Yeah, it could happen. Could we see a bunch of releases and also see companies fail? And I know we're going to get to Big Japan in a little bit here, but you know, if we see companies fail, we're going to see wrestlers look for work. There's a silver lining in that.
Already seen that. I mean, that which we'll get into a lot with All Japan and Pro Wrestling Noah and Wrestle One failing, and you know where those guys have dispersed to, and the you know, to varying degrees of success when it comes to booking. And yeah, that's.
And we can
only
see
going
more
to
of that.
See more of that the longer this goes. It's, you know,
absolutely.
Certainly this isn't a situation where the longer the pandemic goes, some, you know, a wrestling company is magically going to thrive financially. We're certainly not going to see that.
No, I mean, it's, and there's a metaphor that unfortunately is being bandied around too much in reality, and that is life and death. And that is who is going to hold on and live, and who is worth holding on to live, and who judges that? And unfortunately for Big Japan, it's in the fans' hands right now. For other companies, like, you know, say what you want about DDT and New Japan, and like you're talking about Stardom being on the line. Look, you never even know when it comes to the big companies, when it comes to these big corporations, what decision they decide to make. So it is a fascinating time, as well as being obviously a daunting and a very fearful time.
Yeah. No, it's. There's a lot to examine, and at the same time, a significant number of unknowns really on a daily basis, obviously with the whole situation in general and specifically with the wrestling scene in Japan. You mentioned Big Japan, and that's one of the biggest news stories right now, maybe the biggest news story in Japanese wrestling right now. They announced, it's been a little less than a week ago now, I believe the crowdfunding campaign started May 1st. They announced that short of a successful crowdfunding campaign over about a 6-week span, if that doesn't come to fruition, if it doesn't pan out, that the company would end up having to fold. They're a company that they do not have corporate backing. They do not have major sponsorship backing. And as they explained in their announcement, they are almost entirely dependent on Livegate and to a lesser extent merchandise sales at shows. That has been completely taken away. As we talked about in previous months, they were one of the shows that was still, or one of the companies, I should say, that was still regularly running shows in the midst of the pandemic. And as we had talked about, that you could pretty much see which companies couldn't afford to not run shows by which companies were still running shows. And that was the case with Big Japan. And so now we're at a point to where between now and June 12th, there's a certain amount of money that they need to raise. I will take a look here, Mike, as we're talking and see where they are at in that goal. The first day actually did incredibly well. They were over 40% of their goal. So they need to raise 10 million yen, which I believe at last check was around $95,000 to be able to cover business expenses. For the, at least for this time period, as of right now, they're at, they're almost 73% of the way to the goal, which is pretty impressive. And when you look at, the crowdfunding campaign that they've done, which is on, camp-fire.jp, and we'll retweet out again, somebody had posted on the Big Japan, subreddit, a guide for people outside of Japan to donate. It's a little wonky, but it seems as though you can do it. But they, you know, they, like we see here with things like GoFundMe and Kickstarter, they have several different tiers that you can donate to and several different rewards that fans can get, including there's, you know, video messages from wrestlers. There's discounts on merchandise. And then there's one of them, which is actually if you and I believe they've sold out of these now, if you donate a certain amount, you get tickets to whenever they start running again. They're going to run shows that will be only for people that donated at this specific tier to be able to get access to attend those shows. So those are the things they're doing. And yeah, I mean, it's in one sense, it's great. They're at nearly 73% of the way to the goal, and they still have more than a month remaining in the Kickstarter. It shows how, you know, how dedicated their fan base is, that people don't want them to go away. But, you know, a lot of people have pointed out that if this continues in Japan and throughout the world, and the state of emergency, which has just been extended through the end of May, and I can't imagine it wouldn't be extended into and probably through the end of June as well. If that continues, how many of these Kickstarters or these campfires are they going to be able to set, I guess you could say, and get enough money for people to, you know, or get enough money from people to continue running? I think that's an open question at best.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, tough too, because that first day you're probably going to get, you know, in the first 48 hours, a bulk of your donations. And I'm sure that's what happened. And they've gotten up to 73. That's impressive. Now that last, you know, quarter plus is, we'll have to see how it goes. They have a lot of time, as you mentioned. So that's good. I guess that's good. I don't, you know, in some ways, I don't know if that's good or that's bad. You know, I guess it's who's in charge of the PR team and who can make that last rush in that last week when they're surely probably going to need money, because this is probably going to go right up until the end because, you know, hey, times are tough. And, you know, for everybody out there who, you know, there's a wrestler, I'm sure, who's a secret millionaire out there who donated $5,000. Cool. That's great. But for, you know, every one of him, you know, at best, there's, you know, a handful of people with ones and fives and tens, and then hopefully there's enough of those people for Big Japan. But as you mentioned, then what happens if this thing continues on? Then what? Because this is going to sound really ignorant, and I wish I had this money, but when you think about it, in this day and age, what's $100,000? You know, how long does that really go? You know, and unfortunately, it could probably take Big Japan a little bit longer than it may take some other companies, but as you mentioned, with no money coming in, with a very limited amount, and as this thing goes on for a while too, you know, internationally, as far as these TV streaming services and all that sort of stuff, I mean, people are going to go with bang for their buck. They may be, you know, willing to spend $12.99 for the Disney ESPN Hulu bundle, but they may look at that $4.99, the $9.99 here, the $10.99 there, and go, eh, you know, I guess I'll just have to come back to this later on. Even though I love it, I'll have to bootleg it. I'll have to figure out another way. And again, all of these things, we're dealing in nothing but speculation right now. But unfortunately, you know, the dark clouds continue to mount.
Yeah, absolutely. And it will be something that bears watching. I will say that they are doing a good job of getting the Kickstarter out there. You're seeing the individual wrestlers, or I should say the campfire out there. It would be great if, and it's something I don't know if they've explored it all, but they really should look into a parallel crowdfunding campaign on a crowdfunding service.
Look, this needs to be like everything else.
Like a Kickstarter, like an Indiegogo, like, you know, anything like that. Because there are a lot of people, I think, I'm not in massive hundreds of thousands of dollars numbers, but there are a lot of people, wrestling fans, I think, in the U.S., you know, Canada and elsewhere, that would be more apt to donate if they didn't have to, you know, go through the hoops of you know, trying to figure out how to work campfire, creating a fake address to be able to, you know, to be able to make a donation, all those sorts of things. So
people, for every person out there listening to this show, and a lot of them are obviously savvy enough to do this sort of stuff, for every one of you, there's about a zillion people out there who absolutely are going to shut off at some point in that process, either immediately when it comes out of your mouth or sometime during it. And it's
think
a natural
about New Japan World and how many people don't subscribe to that
still,
the simple reason that there's not a Roku channel.
Yeah, and look, know? Yes.
So,
and then
extrapolate that out to it being Big Japan and needing and trying to figure out how you can donate money to them. So, yeah, that's there's I know their first priority, first and foremost, is Japan, and it should be in terms of getting donations. But I'm still hopeful that we'll see something as we get closer to that deadline that makes it a little bit easier for fans outside of Japan to donate.
And I'll say this, and I'll say it for your new podcast venture that you have going on, and for anybody else out there. Look, if you can get get all of your social media in a row. Try to figure out a way to streamline everything you can get, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, IG, whether you plan on using them or not. Try to take all of those things. And when it comes time to try to take in money, have the Cash App, have the, forget some of the other services, but have
Cash App, Venmo,
Venmo, that's it, PayPal, have that, and have all of that sort of stuff. And the same thing with donations too. Have the Kickstarter, have the this, have the Campfire, have the, what's the other, I'm brain locking, but every Patreon, have all of that stuff, yeah. Because you don't know, again, everybody's got their thing. And you've got to try to maximize that, especially in the best you can.
And accessibility. And that's,
absolutely.
You know, yeah, absolutely.
So there, lessons from Mike Sempervivi and Adam Summers. There you go. So, old men talking.
Financial lessons from Mike Sempervivi.
I'm yelling. I got a brown bag of liquor right here. I'm about to sit this chair out on the porch, and I'm going to just start yelling at kids going by. And when once they leave, I got a whole sky of clouds that I'm going to start yelling at, so beware.
All right, well, I want to get into before, because we still have a lot of other things we want to talk about. I want to get into some of the recent shows, the recent Empty Arena shows. You know, as we talked about, Samurai TV, I would imagine without knowing the financials, outside of, like you talked about, you know, the individual streaming services for a lot of these companies, Samurai TV and Samurai TV's need for content is driving a lot of these Empty Arena shows happening. As I talked about on Twitter, the new mecca of Japanese professional wrestling in 2020 is 2AW Square, just as we all predicted coming into 2020. And a lot of the shows have been taking place there. Some of them, there isn't a whole lot that needs to be said about. The 01 show on May 3rd was largely forgettable. Otani and Tetsuhito Takaiwa against Yuji Hino and Masato Tanaka was fine. Hino wins with the bomb, I'll just say, the big power bomb. Hartley Jackson had his first match back. It was fine. And then Chris Weiss of Voodoo Murders defeated Kohei Sato pretty decisively to win the 0-1 title. It was fine. This is not a show that I would really recommend going out of your way to watch if you're trying to figure out what you want to watch.
Wait a second. Who of Voodoo Murders?
Chris Weiss. Yes, he's been around 0-1 for a while, and they're clearly giving him the big foreigner push. And he's not bad. He's fine.
I'm trying. I feel bad now because now I cannot picture this gentleman again. It's early in the morning here, but Chris
big,
Weiss,
big shaved head, white boots, white trunks. Again, not bad at all. He's fine. I mean, it's the match was good, but not great. I don't need to see it. I mean, good might even be a bit of a stretch. It was acceptable. It was watchable. Kohei Sato doing those headbutts on this show,
ooh,
probably unnecessary, but it's Kohei Sato, so that you're not going to be able to stop that. That's pretty much all that needs to be said about the 0-1 show. The DDT TV show from this past weekend was, I'll be honest, I cannot watch Empty Arena comedy wrestling. I'm not a big comedy wrestling guy to begin with, and Empty Arena comedy is just, it doesn't do it for me. So I only watched the main event from this match, which was Endo versus Higuchi. This I absolutely, I won't say absolutely love, but I thought this was a damn good match, one of the better Empty Arena singles matches we've seen in Japan since all of this started. Higuchi gets the win, which was a bit of a surprise. A lariat to the back, a huge sumo tackle, and the powerbomb into the choke slam, and gets the victory. So that puts him in the contendership spot, I believe, to Masato Tanaka for the title. But that Tanaka still has another defense before then, so we shall see where that goes. I know they have. Well, we'll get into their into the upcoming shows in a few minutes, but they have another weekly TV show coming up next weekend. But Mike, that brings us to me, the bulk of what I want to talk about from a shows that I watch perspective, because All Japan ran two shows, April 30th and May 5th. Pro Wrestling Noah ran a show May 3rd. And the difference between the shows, both in terms of atmosphere, presentation, watchability, and most of all, booking, could not be, you could not have a bigger difference. The Noah show, as we've talked about before, their no fans shows have just been very, very dry. There's some good in-ring action, but it's just, to me, they're a slog to get through. This one was 6-on-6. First six singles matches, Sugiura Army versus Kongo, and then they had a 6-on-6 elimination match. None of the, well, this is, the matches, again, the in-ring were fine in a lot of cases, but some of the things that took place on this show, particularly the booking of the Wrestle One guys that they have brought in, the best match, I would say, was Hau versus Seiki Yoshioka. In-ring action, very, very good. The issue, though, is this. Yoshioka, coming over from Wrestle One, he has looked fantastic. He's looked great in Noah. Right now, you watch him in the ring, he looks like the best junior heavyweight in the world. But the booking is just, it's been terrible. He drops the fall in the junior tag title match, which it was him and Ohara versus Hayata and Yohei. Drops the fall there, which is an interesting way to bring in a guy that you know clearly have some plans for. Then here, against Hau, who is fine, but certainly not a top guy, not a top junior in the company. He loses here. Again, great match, but loses. So now he's lost his last two falls. And then you go into the 6-on-6 match, and he is the first elimination cleanly pinned by Yoshiki and Imura. So you have that. That's the first thing. Then you have Manabu Soya, the new member of Kongo, another big addition from Wrestle One. And what happens with him on this show after, I will say, you know, an impressive debut for him. They booked him well, or, you know, he was put in a position to succeed in the first show that he was on. But here, he loses decisively to Takashi Sugiura in a singles match, and then gets dumped out like a geek in the six-way, or in the 6-on-6 match. So, you know, it's a really more of the same that we talked about on previous shows. I think it was the last show, Mike, where we talked about the tag league final with Dupree and Wagner winning, and then them going on to defeat Marufuji and Mochizuki. I am not at all impressed by Nosawa right now as a booker of Noah, which is a shame because I like the roster, and obviously they have money behind them that they haven't had in a long time, but the way they're booking these Wrestle One guys, particularly when you compare it against what we're about to talk about, which is All Japan, these last two shows, it's not encouraging.
Does Kitamiya have a tag team partner he's been regularly teaming with? I mean, I guess in the Global Tag League, I he was with Kenu, well, I guess.
With Kenno, yeah. I mean, so the play would be putting Kitamiya and Soya together and giving them a run at the tag titles, but haven't really seen any hint of that yet.
Well, I mean, and that's like, okay, then I could actually handle Soya losing to Sugiura. Look, and I have a problem with him losing to Sugiura. It's looking like a geek afterwards and looking more lesser than, and that comes on the heels of Kitamiya and Dupree going to a draw, and I don't know how much you want to mash Rene Dupree over, although, again, this is my own bias. I'm a little amazed that we are talking about him at the level we are in 2020. And I know it's a weird year and everything, but I look at Kitamiya and I'm thinking, well, this would be a good time to have Kitamiya have him beat one of their guys who's already your champion, who's obviously going to get revenge on Kitamiya at some point if you decide to do that. And you might have a flashier tag picture because right now, I don't know what their tag picture is going to be, but I'm not sitting here. Again, I don't know in some ways what I'm looking at in comparison to you because I have not kept up, you know, with what's been going on with Noah in the same ways. I've been seeing matches. I don't know the feel of the entire promotion, but I can say after, you know, what's been going on here in the last little bit since the whole, you know, changeover has been made that I'm sitting back and willing to give them time to see where it goes, but it's like, it's got a lot of players involved, and I know it's time and space with Wrestle One going down right now and everything, but there are a lot of players involved that I leave myself scratching my head a little bit.
Yeah, it's really right now the feel is like part Noah, part IGF, part Tokyo Gurantai, and it's not working for me.
Yeah, it's a weird juxtaposition. It's just a weird group.
A weird mix.
Yeah.
The thing I'll say about this show on May 3rd in particular, was this was almost WWE-like in that they booked themselves into a corner by doing this show where then, just by the nature of who could lose, who you really couldn't have lose, you put yourself in a situation to beat guys you shouldn't be beating, particularly with Sugiura beating Soya. The other thing that's weird, and I'll preface by saying I love Hajime Ohara. I've talked about that I wish he would get more of a push. But you have him beat High 69, Hiroki, now whatever you're calling him now. He beats him, and then you have Hau beat Yoshioka. Why would you not have done the opposite? Ohara, he's dropped a ton of falls. You can have him drop a fall. There's no reason for Yoshioka to be the one dropping a fall there. And then, like I said, there, to me, if you had just done a regular undercard and then done this 6-on-6 match with and weighted it a little more heavily to over the top rope eliminations, that was the other weird thing, is it felt like it went 35 minutes in and we finally had somebody go for an over the top rope elimination, which just felt weird because that was one of the ways you could eliminate a guy, and that, you know, usually in those matches you see that teased a lot more. The only time you had that teased was an admittedly funny spot where very early on someone got knocked to the floor and Sakuraba, he's doing a pescado, and the rest of his team came over and put up the X sign and said, don't do that. So,
but it's
that,
like,
was amusing. But outside of that, the finish, which was interesting, which was Kenno getting a flash pin on Sakuraba. They were the last two. So he countered the arm lock into a roll up for the pin. So Kongo wins. But again, like I said, to me, you could have avoided a lot of the unnecessary issues that I talked about if you just would have had a normal undercard and then had, just had the 6-on-6 match as it was. It wouldn't have been anywhere near as egregious. So that's the Noah show.
Hey, he beats the Booker and the ultimate outsider. So, you know, it is protection, but there is, you better play this thing. And how, you know, defeating, obviously they like him because he eliminated Sugiura, and he at least had a good night, and he got,
And he looked good. It was just weird.
Because they both should have won
over the top rope, but it still was just weird that when you're bringing in the guys you bring in, that then that's who's getting the quote unquote shine in this. It's just the whole thing with, like I said, the Soya thing. I thought was ridiculous too, because again, you could bring him in and you don't have to put him over one of your top guys, but you also don't have to have him get beat by one of your top guys that early if you want him to be a threat. Which is what we'll talk about with the All Japan shows, the way they've booked the guys from Wrestle One that they've brought in, particularly Shotaro Ishino. It's been the exact opposite.
And to be fair, Noah is still trying to find their way. So that'll be the period we can put on the end of that sentence, as it's basically now we're going, would I be wrong in saying we're going to switch from the much more sterile and sometimes confusing NXT feel? I guess maybe we can use that comparison, and now we can switch the channel over to Turner Network Television to see Dynamite, I guess, when it comes to All Japan. These are very, by the way, awful comparisons, but it's Wednesday as we record this, so we'll go with it.
I mean, you're not entirely wrong. The All Japan shows have been, for my money, by far the best empty arena shows in Japan, with an honorable mention to Dragon Gate. The couple empty arena shows they've done have been very entertaining as well. I really enjoyed the 2AW show from whatever it was last week or a couple weeks ago. But the All Japan shows, the combination of the roster, the fact that they're outside of main events, they're not booking overly long matches. They're doing a great job of changing things up a little bit in terms of wrestlers playing directly to the camera, not too much, but just enough. And having All Japan staff and other wrestlers sort of in the background, you don't really see them, but scattered towards the back of 2AW Square, really not making a lot of noise early on in the show, but come the last few matches, making enough noise and you know, whether it be chants or, you know, yelling the wrestlers' names, just enough that it gives the wrestler something to play off of and gives it enough of a not completely sterile feel. And both of the shows, the April 30th show and the May 5th show in particular, were very, very good. In particular, the stuff with Shotaro Ishino, it's just fantastic. The show on the 30th, it was Takao Omori and Hokuto Omori taking on Shotaro Shino and X, who ended up being Yusuke Kodama of Wrestle 1, who was going to be in the Big Japan Junior Singles Tournament, which apparently isn't going to be taking place or is at least postponed through all of this. So he is now, at least now, for now, in All Japan. This was just great. You put those guys in there with guys that, you know, Omori, older, but has, you know, some credibility. And the younger Omori, Hokuto Omori, you know, they're top young guy, but clearly still a rookie. You put them in there with guys they could have a good match with, but that it wasn't a problem to have them beat and that they could look great as great in the ring with. And that's exactly what happened. Shotaro Ishino is just of everyone that's been made available so far by Wrestle 1 closing, he is far and away the best guy. We talked about it before that All Japan would be the perfect landing place for him, and that's that clearly is taking place. He ends up getting the win here on Hokuto Omori with the ankle lock. You know, just a lot of really cool stuff in the match. Ishino with an overhead suplex, a pop-up uppercut, and a running uppercut, a great double-team German suplex in this match. And as I have in my notes here, this was a perfect debut match. Basically from, you know, it's really, you know, without being too heavy handed, it's, you know, Ishino and the Wrestle 1 guys coming in and attempting to take over more or less. Jake Lee came out afterwards and got in Ishino's face. And that clearly was going to set something up down the line. Other noteworthy thing on this show was a very good All-Asia tag title match with Miyamoto and Kodaka defending the All-Asia tag titles against Kento Miyahara and Akira Francesco, or Francesco Akira, however you want to say it. Very good. It ended up being overshadowed, though, by the main event on the May 5th show, the show that just took place yesterday. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch that yet, Mike, but the Violence Giants versus Yoshitatsu and Kento Miyahara for the All Japan tag titles was awesome.
Oh, good. Because I haven't seen it yet, but that was the one match that on paper, it's like, yes, you know, I can't, it's not going to be bad. At worst, it's going to be good. It's just how many steps above good 3 stars is this thing going to be? So how many stars or above 3 was this thing? Was it excellent? Was it great? Was it classic?
I would certainly put it at 4 at least.
So it was excellent.
It was great because it played off of on the previous show. There was a tag match with Yoshitatsu and Suwama on opposite sides. Suwama and Yoshitatsu went at it after the match, and Tatsu asked for a singles match, and they immediately had a singles match, which then Suwama just beat the hell out of him and got him in the rear chin lock of doom, the sleeper hold, ended up getting disqualified for refusing to break the hold. So then that set up this tag title match here. And it was great. It was one of those deals where Yoshitatsu, whenever you put him in these situations, seemingly over the last couple of years in All Japan, where you're like, oh, I don't know how this is going to go. It's Yoshitatsu. It ends up being great. Just like his Triple Crown match with Kento Miyahara last year. This was largely centered around Tatsu and Suwama. It kind of kept going back to that. It does need to be said that Kento Miyahara, I would say, is by far the best wrestler in the world right now in terms of empty arena matches. He just engaging with the fans through the lens of the camera.
He's a ham.
The entire staff and wrestlers into AW Square to chant his name. And then just, you know, the ongoing arguments that he always has with Kyohei Wada. You know, him yelling at Suwama, rallying the fans, quote unquote, for Yoshitatsu. Like, he is just, if you were worried that anything about Kento Miyahara and his personality, such as it is, would be muted by what's been going on with these shows being empty arena, do not worry. He is certainly Kento Miyahara. But yeah, the match, the finish, Suwama had to do quite a bit to put him away. He hit him with a backdrop suplex, then a couple of extremely deadly looking backdrop drivers, and then finished him off with the backdrop suplex hold that he used to win the title from Kento Miyahara. He used that here to defeat Yoshitatsu. I thought maybe we would get something afterward with a title challenge, either for the Triple Crown or the tag titles. We didn't get that. That being said, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the line we do see the aforementioned Shotaro Ishino in the mix for either of those belts. He's been pretty much every appearance he's been motioning, you know, the I want a belt around his waist sort of motion. And the match that he had here, again, it was the former All-Asia Tag Team Champions Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto taking on Shotaro Ishino and another X, which everyone assumed would be someone from Wrestle 1. And if you looked at the silhouette that they had in the match preview, it literally could only be one person, and it ended up being that guy, Kuma Arashi, who is huge. They came out with Yusuke Kodama, who had an awesome match earlier on in the show with Yusuke Okada, and Kodama won that match in dominant, impressive fashion like he should have. But here he comes out with Ishino and Arashi, and he is just, you know, his creepy, slimy best in the ring entrance, taunting Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto. And they have a match, and unsurprisingly, it's very, very good, particularly the exchanges between Ishino and Jake Lee were awesome. Arashi looked great. He hit one of the biggest standing sentons I think I've ever seen in my life. There was one wacky spot that thanks to the magic of editing didn't look as bad as it should have. But we had the deal where I think it was Iwamoto was on the mat near the ropes. Arashi and Ishino stood on his stomach, Arashi and then Ishino on top of Arashi. And it appeared as though they got a little too aggressive with this, and they both tumbled over the top rope onto a photographer. Mm. But the editing with the camera changes, you kind of only saw the aftermath of it. And thank God nobody got hurt. Obviously, the photographer and Ishino seemed to be shaking off his knee initially, but clearly was okay by the end. So that was a thing that happened. But the finish of this match, if you only watch anything, and I would say watch the whole match, because again, everything with Ishino so far has been perfect in All Japan. But the finish of this match where Iwamoto throws Ishino off the ropes, he's going to hit his judo throw that he uses as his finisher. Ishino rolls through all in one motion, beautiful counter, straight into the ankle lock. Iwamoto does a great job trying to slide, get out of it. Ishino slides with him, holds onto the ankle lock, drops down, clamps it on even more, gets a submission win. So the Wrestle 1 guys continue to be undefeated, led by Ishino in All Japan. Kodama is mocking Iwamoto, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see a singles match there. And then Ishino and Jake Lee jawing after the match, again, clearly building to a singles match with those two. So can't say enough good things, like I said, about All Japan right now and the shows they're putting on. And it's been announced that they will be running shows on, or they'll have TV shows on May 16th and May 24th on Samurai TV, along with something that they're going to be doing every Wednesday, which is a All Japan Pro Wrestling TV Fight Club with different themed matches. It appears as though one match each week. So, something to look out for there, and I've said it before, if you're looking for one company just based on content only to watch and really dive into right now during this time period, I would highly recommend All Japan.
I'm not going to stir up the waters too much to let that marinate, everything that you just said. The only thing I'll add to that is, number one, Shotaro Ishino, it's so important that he be treated in a good position, and he is going to be treated in a good place with All Japan, because he's perfect for them, as you mentioned, and they desperately need him. They need more than just the guys that they have, and Ishino coming in, perfect timing in some ways, right place, right time. He's got good pedigree. He may end up, he's not going to be, we'll have to see, you know, what happens.
He's going to be in that mix of top guys.
Well, his size, but
he isn't right in there with those guys.
No, he in All Japan, he absolutely is. Now, his size is going to deter him from being at a level of a Sonata, but in some ways, we'll have to see what happens here with Ishino and where his career path goes. But you could argue that he may be more influential in whatever companies in the next couple of years that he decides he's going to stay and work in than even where we're at with Sonata. So, I mean, you know, where Sonata's at right now with New Japan, I mean, I'm not saying he's on the back end of his career or anything and you can't make magic happen with him or anything like that. But when you look at Ishino with All Japan, when you look at the young guys that they have, when you look at other companies and, you know, possibilities of where he could go that aren't New Japan and how he fits in certain places. And he's great because he wrestles bigger than what he is, but he is still smaller than all of those other guys, which again, because he's got a good background as far as, you know, he knows how to be entertaining. He knows how to work a room, you know, for the most part.
He comes off legitimate, too.
Yeah, and he's not a baby.
He, like you said, he wrestles bigger than he is. Like, obviously, he's in there with Jake Lee, and Jake Lee looks like a giant with him.
Yeah.
But he's not so small that he doesn't look like he could hang. And the fact that he's the size that he is, it also makes – when he's in there with, you know, a big blown up, but you know, junior heavyweight. I don't mean blown up in a cardio way, but just a junior heavyweight that's as big as his frame will allow, like Iwamoto. You know, you can buy into Iwamoto being able to, like, oh, you know, even though you know it's not going to happen, like, oh yeah, he could pick up a fall on him. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. And much like Takashi Sugiura in a different time and place, he's being a guy who likes the suplex, being a smaller guy.
Very good comparison.
Who doesn't have a shitty gimmick? He black boots, black trunks, he suplexes,
he listens to Metallica. He's a short but not too short, legit badass dude who listens to Metallica, and he's here to fuck your shit up and take your belts with his friends. That's what he's here to do.
But you still
he's not
know
messing around.
Exactly, but you still know with his pedigree coming from Kazayashi and Keiji Muto that in the cabinet, and we've seen it a little bit, he's got some spices. So it's he's at a good time and place, and he's another one of these guys in the 30 and under crew as some of these other ones creep over now, 31, 32.
And so again, just to put a bow on that whole discussion with the Wrestle One guys, you look at how All Japan has handled those guys, and you look at how Noah has handled Seiki Yoshioka and Manabu Soya, and you can't help but think, particularly with Yoshioka, how much better of a fit he would have been in All Japan, and how much of a boost it would have given to that junior heavyweight division, much like Kodama is. But, you know, that's for another day. That clearly isn't going to happen. Before we get to our New Japan rewatch, which we did the Twitter poll for, and we promised to do, I do want to quickly run through some of the shows that have been announced that are coming up. We have the Pro Wrestling Noah show coming up on May 9th. Which will be a Samurai TV /DDT Universe show. So that will be available live and quickly on demand. The main match on that show, Takashi Sugiura defending the national title against Katsuyuko Nakajima. That will be great no matter what any of the other things we talked about. GHC Junior Tag Titles, Hayata and Yohei versus Yoshinari Ogawa and Kotaro Suzuki. Kaito Kiyomiya versus Atsushi Kitoge. And the other match that I'm looking forward to on the show, which we briefly talked about last week, and I'll be even more interested to see how this goes now, and God help us all if Yoshioka drops a fall again here, but Mara Fuji and Mochizuki against Hajime Ohara and Seiki Yoshioka on paper, that should be a great match. So that's coming up on the 9th for Noah. On the 10th, Great Muta and Mara Fuji versus Kazushi Sakuraba and Masaki Mochizuki. That's the only thing announced for that Abema TV broadcast. We also have the DDT TV show number 2. That'll be coming up this Saturday on the 9th. There's a 2AW show coming up on May 10th as well at 2AW Square. That's a Samurai TV broadcast. No Yuji Okabayashi on this show, so there will not be a 2AW title defense. We will have the tag titles on the line, though. Kaji Tamado and Chango versus Kengo Mishimo and Kunio Toshima, which should be really, really good. And then also Tank Nagai and Ayato Yoshida taking on Shu Asakawa and Ayumi Honda. So that'll be top two matches, at least, will definitely be worth watching. The other, probably the biggest announcement as far as empty arena shows coming up here. Well, let's get to quickly the All Japan lineup for the show on the 16th. The World Junior Heavyweight title match, which was supposed to take place last month, actually in Dragon Gate. Now it's going to take place in All Japan. Susumu Yokosuka defending the Junior Heavyweight title against Hikaru Sato in the main event, which is cool. It'll be fun to see that get a main event slot. Suwama and Yusuke Okada teaming up against Kento Miyahara and Yoshitatsu. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see more interaction here with Suwama and Yoshitatsu. It seemed like that was put to bed, but maybe Tatsu gets a pin here and gets a title shot. And then the next step in the All Japan versus Wrestle 1 run here with Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto taking on Shotaro Ishino and Yusuke Kodama. So there's that. But then, Mike, it brings us to, like I said, probably the biggest announcement as far as Empty Arena shows for the month of May, as the King of Gate tournament will take place for Dragon Gate Empty Arena exclusively on Dragon Gate Network, with the first round getting underway on May 15th, with subsequent first round shows on the 16th and 17th of the month.
Do you want me to ask Larry C. Dallas what he thinks about this show?
I think we can, if you want to have a personal conversation, you can. I'll pass.
So it doesn't matter. He's going to drag you into one anyway. So you better watch out, because he's going to be relentless. He'll put that New York on you. So yeah, he is in his glory right now. I think. I don't know. I know he was stuck over there for a while, as a lot of people were.
Yeah, and I think he's back.
He's back, and I don't know how this is going to work.
He's back on Twitter, that's for sure.
So I don't know if he is he going back over there. Are they doing these remotely? I have no idea.
That's a good question.
I have no idea how this whole thing is going to work here. But, yeah, it's set up for, the 15th, 16th, and 17th. And, Dragon Gate, as they have for years, stands alone by themselves. Very unique. You know, there's always that company for years that would stand outside of the box. And Dragon Gate has held that position, I think, strongly. I think they took that from DDT, even though I don't think DDT intended on giving it up. And I think some other things. I think Dragon Gate, as far as the independent step away from all the other pro wrestling, it always feels like Dragon Gate is that promotion, and they are confident in who they are and what they are, and they are always a natural alternative to everything, and they feel like that right now.
Yeah, and this will be, again, it'll be fun to have a tournament to focus on. Particularly looking forward to, if I had to pick a first round match that I'm most looking forward to, probably the show on the 17th with Kagetora and Ben Kay. But there's intriguing matches.
Ben Kay got big. He's been eating right. Alan Farrell pointed that out. So my man's is it's like he's been in the hole. It's like he's been in the county pen. He's got three hots in a cot. All he can do is pump weights. Apparently that's what Ben Kay is dealing with right now when it comes to quarantine.
Yeah. Everyone has their coping mechanisms. Some people snack. Clearly Ben Kay on a different
Well, he's snacking on that Alistair Overeem horse meat.
Be able to watch and track over the course of, like I said, the 15th, 16th, and 17th, and then additional dates for the rest of the tournament to be announced.
So there you go. Hey, now, my only question I will ask you about Dragon Gate is, how do you feel about the age of the roster and their replacement of guys? Obviously, they're in the mix like everybody else is. Everybody's always looking for new talent, and obviously, there was the passing of the torch in some ways from Pac to Ben Kay, and Ben Kay is phenomenal. But, you know, is there enough there? You know, BB Hulk and, you know, as these other guys age out, even though Mochizuki and some other guys don't, you know, it feels like they'll never age out, but obviously they are. And are they creating enough talent, do you think, to keep things going at a good clip, or do you think they're a little behind?
I mean, I think for now, yes. I mean, I think the next year or two is going to tell the tale. I think the biggest hurdle to get over was the post Stronghearts departure and the bit of a drop off, at that point in terms of interest and attendance. And it seems as though kind of largely weathered that storm and come out the other end. Definitely from a structural and business standpoint, in a much better situation than they were under the previous leadership. And that seems to be, again, I think they're all right. But like you said, I mean, there certainly are, you know, Mochizuki, he still is great, but I think we're getting close to the point where we're going to start to see it be noticeable that he's slowing down, and some of the other guys you mentioned as well. So time will tell, but I'm more bullish on them than I was right after the Stronghearts departure, for whatever that's worth.
Kind of laughing to see Genki Horiguchi and Dragon Kid and just some of the Doi, you know, guys that have been around for decades, you know, just they've been around for a long time. And even now,
even Susumu Yokosuka, who's, you know, still great. And it's been fun to see him get his run in All Japan with the junior title.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to digress into memories too much, but I remember doing shows where BB Hulk was on the come up and Yamato was on the come up, and, you know, how's it going to work with all of these guys? You know, just we'll have to see what shakes out with a lot of other groups, especially in North America. But boy, I would like to see an increase in foreigners in Dragon Gate or them doing business with foreigners. I would like that.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what their more isolationist stance, how that goes, you know, goes forward. It's going to be a brave new world coming out of all of this, if and when we finally, you know, come out the other end of the entire coronavirus situation. So time will tell, as you said, and time is telling the story that this show is running much longer than we planned on it going. So let's get into, before we close it out, the two matches. That's right, two matches that ended up being selected in the Twitter poll for our New Japan Rewatch of the Week. Very quick recap. The idea is that we take the New Japan recommended matches spreadsheet. There's a match randomizer function on that. Run that four times. Put those four matches up on a Twitter poll for 48 hours, and whatever match gets the most votes, gets the highest percentage of votes, that's the match that we'll review on the following week's edition of the show. That being said, of course, because we are the Big Audio Nightmare, and nothing ever really goes according to plan, we ended up having a tie for the top vote getters as Bam Bam Bigelow versus Scott Norton from February 5th, 1991 in Sapporo received 34% of the vote. That was the early leader, and the late comer that came to tie it was Shinsuke Nakamura versus Minoru Suzuki from the semifinals of the New Japan Cup on March 23rd, 2014, that also received 34% of the vote. Other matches that were involved, a Great Kabuki versus Great Muta match, which shockingly only received 18% of the vote, and Masahiro Chono versus Shiro Koshinaka from January 4th, 1996, I believe, that only received 14% of the vote. So that left us with, like I said, two matches to review. And Mike, let's get into quickly the first one, which is Bam Bam Bigelow versus Scott Norton from February 5th, 1991.
Yeah, this is a, you know, I would have figured our fan base may have leaned more towards Muta and Kabuki than they would this match. But the lads love the hosses, and this was certainly a hoss fight of epic proportions. We're probably, what, maybe a little under 4 years into the career of Bam Bam Bigelow, Crusher Bam Bam Bigelow in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Scott Norton was a couple years in at this point as well, too. But neither one of these guys would take many losses, at least cleanly. Either time any of them lost, it would be by disqualification. So this, I believe, was the first singles match between the two that they ever had. And if not, it wasn't, it may have only been the second one, and they didn't go very long, and there was a lot of high impact slamming into each other, and that's what we got in this one. And they didn't waste too much time with anything. Scott Norton tapped Bam Bam Bigelow before the bell. Before you knew it, whether he intended to do it or not, Bam Bam Bigelow was busted open, and off to the races we went for about, oh, I don't know, what was it, four or five minutes?
Maybe four minutes tops. And yeah, Bigelow charged the ring, no introductions. Norton attacks him, and basically Norton knocks him to the floor. Every time Bigelow tries to get back in the ring, Norton keeps knocking him to the floor, posts him. You know, he's bleeding. Bigelow reverses it, posts Norton. Norton falls to the floor. And just very openly blades. And then we've basically got the rest of the match, both guys bleeding profusely. We had one of my least favorite spots in pro wrestling, which is what I like to call the blood transfusion headbutts. That was in full effect here.
Would you like to describe that to the people? GCW-like?
It's basically what it sounds like. Two guys very much bleeding from the forehead profusely, and one man headbutts the other man, and some DNA is swapped, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And yeah, that happened multiple times here. You know, we had a pretty impressive spot where Bam Bam Bigelow, who was clearly the de facto babyface in this match, that's who the crowd was chanting for, hits a huge flying crossbody. Norton initially catches him, but after a few seconds can't hold him anymore. Bigelow falls on him. The slugfest continues. Eventually, we have both men, particularly Bigelow, but both men throwing referee Tiger Hattori down, and we get a disqualification. At that point, then, you know, they brawl to the floor, they brawl through the crowd, they brawl to the back. The crowd is booing. Then we get a cut to what appears to be that you've got the ring announcer back in the ring, and we're about to go to the next match, and instead, you hear a rumble through the crowd. Bigelow comes back out yelling for Norton. Norton doesn't come out. There's a huge Bam Bam Bigelow chant, huge Bigelow chant. Bigelow leaves the ring, goes to the back and wipes his hand on his face and then slaps the wall, slapping his own blood onto the wall. And that gets a big pop from the crowd. Then we cut back to the ring. They're about to do, again, they're about to start, you know, the entrances for the next match. And now we hear another large rumble of sound through the crowd. And Scott Norton comes back, still bloody, comes back to the ring saying he wants Bam Bam Bigelow. Huge Bigelow chant. Bigelow comes back out, meets him at the aisleway, and they brawl again in the aisle back to the locker room. So not much of a match, but highly entertaining for what it was for the 7 minutes this this video file is on New Japan World. If you just want to see two big guys beat the hell out of each other, bleed, express a hatred, and then brawl to the back, while it's not a satisfying finish, there's worse ways to spend 7 minutes during a pandemic.
And the best part was they weren't even feuding. It was just that they had teamed a lot before this, and they had teamed after this. It was just, they're just big men, and they're
big
now,
Hoss energy.
Exactly.
It had to spill out some way.
You got that Mid-South junk going on there. I mean, you can't be putting all these hosses together and not expect some plundering and thundering to be taking place. And if you're going to kick people in the nuts, at least get them some ice, if not jerk them off. And if you knew later on that crowd had to watch Ricky Choshu and Tiger Jeet Singh, and they were doing this in 1991, so they know what that match is going to be. The match that took place right after this was Tatsumi Fujinami and Osamu Kidu. So you knew that match was going to be more scientific. You knew it was going to probably go, in fact, longer than it actually did. And the match that took place before this was Keiji Muto and Demolition X, Bill Eady. So Bill Eady was fantastic. Mass Superstar is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. I don't know, maybe not that far, but I would certainly argue that he could be a Hall of Famer. But you knew that match was not exactly super dynamic or anything like that. So Norton and Bigelow had a piece that people wanted them to fill. And when it looked like they didn't get that, they weren't happy about it. So what do you do? You know, how do you make sure that you're not going to have a revolt? And look, Fujinami and Kido went 9:30 and Choshu and Tiger Jeet Singh went 7:30. So if you're going to do a 3-minute and 45-second match and then go short in the next one, it's like, what are you going to do here? Well, the way you take some of the distraction away from Fujinami going a little bit short before you get to a main event that's all gimmick is you have them come back out and you distract from the fact that the beginning of where the announcements are supposed to be taking place, you know, are now dragged into deep waters. And you got Norton and Bigelow coming back out there to put on the spectacle. So I think, you know, the match itself, you take and you kind of put it to the side, and it doesn't mean, you know, maybe as much as you know, some other matches could, but it does make sense how the whole thing played out and in its time and space, what it meant. And in a way, I'm kind of happy that it did tie with Nakamura and Suzuki, because much like this match, that match was also not really about the match quality. It was a stop on the way in a big story played out for that played out for Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good segue. And yeah, as we move to March 23rd, 2014, Amagasaki, this was the finals, or the semifinal, I should say, the final night of the New Japan Cup. The two semifinals, by the way, were Shinsuke Nakamura versus Minoru Suzuki and Bad Luck Fale versus Shelton Benjamin. So the random generator definitely gave us the right one of those two semifinals to watch. Noteworthy that this is, at least to my records, the final singles match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Minoru Suzuki. this was, well, I guess the first thing I'll say is I have not gone back and watched a lot of Shinsuke in New Japan since he left and went to WWE, just because it's too painful. But you almost forget, if you've only seen him recent WWE, just how great Nakamura got when he finally became the Shinsuke Nakamura that he did, the leather pants weirdo Shinsuke Nakamura. And just his entrance, his music in New Japan was great. His entrance, just the guy oozed charisma, you know, just in a completely unique way. And just seeing what the situation is now is obviously depressing. But Minoru Suzuki was Minoru Suzuki here, also in his own way, completely oozing aura and charisma. So this was, I don't know what your thoughts were on this, Mike. This was good. It wasn't great. It wasn't the best Minoru Suzuki Shinsuke Nakamura match you're ever going to get. But it also, again, this was a semifinal. They had to wrestle again later in the New Japan Cup final. It was a pretty simple match. It really was a story of Minoru Suzuki dominating most of the match. Taichi as Suzuki's second, helping him cheat, helping him use chairs to work over the arm of Shinsuke Nakamura. But Suzuki, I thought, looked great here. Just a lot of little things on submissions, small joint manipulation on the Fujiwara armbar, the execution of the key lock, which maybe you can describe it better than I can, but basically instead of it being a double wrist lock where both hands were on the wrist, he had one hand on the wrist and then he was sort of cupping the elbow and the forearm with his other hand to put more pressure and torque on it. Like, I just thought that Suzuki is obviously always great at submissions, but this was another level up, I feel like, than what we normally even see from him in terms of the submission game.
Well, and it was his concentrated attack. He was going to go after that left arm, you know, come hell or high water. That's what he was, literally from Jump Street, right as they started. He was going after that thing, and he set the tone very early on, too, that, like, Nakamura got cute and got out of something, and immediately Suzuki was back on that arm, and it was the temperature was set right away, the template was set, whatever it is.
The tone was set,
my God. It was
his strategy to advance to the final was take out the arm of Shinsuke Nakamura, submit him, and move on as quickly as possible.
As I should move on as quickly as possible. Words be failing me and whatnot up in here. But, you know, the story of Nakamura, look, the match he had with Fale, and this was a different Fale than what we know him as now. This was still the threatening Fale. You know, this match, you look at it and you go, well, it should have been better. But there, we also have to tell the story of the card. Fale in the other semifinal killed Shelton Benjamin in 3 minutes and 40-something seconds. Nakamura was going to have to do pretty much some yeoman's work in putting that in and making Fale look good. Not to say that Fale wouldn't hold up his end of the deal, but like, that was Nakamura's job in that final, was to basically run the show, to create doubt in everybody's mind about him winning the thing. And look, he had never won the thing before. He had reached the finals in 2011 against Yuji Nagata, but he was out early in 2012 and 2013. He got hurt in 2007. In 2009, he was there as a stair step for Goto to go ahead and win the thing. So, you know, you could look at this and go, well, was this going to be Nakamura's year? You know, hell, he had already elevated the Intercontinental title to such a point that that year it main evented the Tokyo Dome over Naito and Goto and the IWGP title. So did Nakamura need this? He didn't need this, but did his resume need it? It did. But are they going to try to mash over Fale? I mean, we've seen a lot of guys, you know, advance to the finals of the New Japan Cup that aren't at the Tanahashi and Nakamura level. So there were a lot of questions going into this thing, and there was a lot on Nakamura's plate to try to lay it out to everybody and create some doubt and really, you know, lay things out in a nice way, and I think he did an excellent job of it. He goes through Davey Boy Smith in the first round. He beats Prince Devitt in the second round, and that plays into his final two matches as he goes in there with Suzuki, with Bad Luck Fale, basically playing the bosses of their collective groups and having guys on the outside that are going to be causing a lot of havoc and pain for Nakamura.
Yeah, no, that was a great layout of what happened, and absolutely. The story going into the final was that Fale got through very quickly, very easily, while Nakamura had not a long match, but a pretty torturous match where he suffered an injury with his arm. So, you know, the story was that, you know, Fale, on top of just being the bigger wrestler, also would have the advantage going into the final in terms of freshness. The finish of this match, or the build to the finish, I thought was really good with, again, we had Suzuki working over Shinsuke's arm, a great spot where Shinsuke was holding on to the top rope, pulling himself up, and Nakamura, or Suzuki just killed his arm with a straight kick, then went for the Fujiwara armbar again. Nakamura rolled through, hit a flying high knee, and then a quick sort of running bamiyes. Suzuki kicks out. Nakamura hits another full running bamiyes and gets the win. And yeah, not a blowaway match. This wasn't a tournament final. It served its purpose. Not every good match has to be 30 minutes. This was, probably 14 minutes or so, maybe 13, 14 minutes.
Something like that. I could find out for sure. But, you know, here's a interesting fact about it too, that maybe you wouldn't realize. And I didn't realize it until I looked at, the brackets, over the next couple of years. This was the last New Japan Cup that Shinsuke Nakamura was in.
Yes. However, it was not the last final that Bad Luck Fale was in, as Bad Luck Fale lost to the lost to Katsuyori Shibata in the 2017 final.
Man, it seems like forever ago that Katsuyori Shibata was an active professional wrestler. It's been less than 3 years, and it feels like forever.
I still can't accept it. I have a very hard. He's on my very, very short list of favorite wrestlers of all time, and I have an extremely hard time going back and watching his matches just because it still upsets me too much.
Well, Adam, I don't want to upset you anymore, and I don't want to end the show on a dour note. So, is there anything I can do to lift you back up? And you know what? There is something I can do. As I look over at the wall here, and I see this action figure of Milano Collection AT in the 2005, I believe it is, glasses on to celebrate the new year, and he's got the leash and he's walking the dog, and I think about him and Julia together, and I think about a beautiful, wonderful relationship and the incredibly wonderful and talented kids that they could have with amazing dexterity and wonderful hair. I think about this stuff sometimes. I really do.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure.
Did I make you feel better?
Too much time thinking about that, but yes, that is a wonderful thought. Yes, we should close it out. I do want to mention briefly before we close it out, if you're looking for more random wrestling reviews, the second episode of the Wrestling at Random podcast that I am doing with Jeremy Deamer, that went up last Sunday, covering Clash of the Champions 21, November 18th, 1992. There's a great Rick Rude versus Sting match on that show. Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes versus Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas for the Unified World Tag Team titles. Kensuke Sasaki, Kensuke himself, teaming with Eric Watts to take on Bobby Eaton and Arn Anderson, which that somehow wasn't a Battle Bowl team, a Lethal Lottery team. That was just a real team that existed in real life. Also, a pre-Raven Scotty Flamingo in a boxing match with Johnny B. Badd, which features, I'll just say, as a teaser for the episode that we recorded and have uploaded, we describe one of the worst promos of all time, which is tied to that boxing match. And much more, a Paul E. Medusa match on that show. So if you want to hear that, hear us discuss that, that is up at wrestlingatrandom.com. You can follow at Wrestle at Random, or if you just want to search Wrestling at Random wherever you get podcasts, that is up. We'll also be announcing on that Twitter account tomorrow as I record this. On Thursday, we'll be announcing what show the randomizer chose for the next episode, which will go up this Sunday. So, yeah, if you're looking for more content, we would appreciate it if you would give that a listen. And I'm sure, Mike, do you have anything on the Mid-Atlantic podcast side to talk about?
Well, of course. And Mid-Atlantic Pod, as I mentioned earlier on, no matter how you look at your social media, SoundCloud, Vimeo, YouTube, all that sort of stuff, at Mid-Atlantic Pod, and just go to midatlanticpod.com. to check out the podcast. We review Mid-Atlantic Heavy, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling shows.
There's a lot of heavyweights on
Mid-Atlantic. There are. I mean, I tell you what, it's a heavyweight lineup, and we started at the beginning of 1982. We are into, in fact, this week in 1982, we are hot and heavy into the Jack Briscoe, Roddy Piper feud, and you look up and down at that roster. And we mentioned it on the show this week that we actually recorded on Monday night, and I hopefully will have that up very, very soon. Like, you look at the guys who aren't on the show. Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Jay Youngblood, Jake Roberts, Ivan Koloff, Jimmy Valiant, who are in a hot feud right now. Names from the past, Johnny Weaver, Paul Jones, just name after name. These are guys who aren't on the show. And, you know, on the show this week, Killer Khan, Angelo Mosca, Sergeant Slaughter, Roddy Piper. By the way, Greg Valentine not on this show. Barry Windham, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. just left. So you look at the talent roster that is assembled in Mid-Atlantic at that time, and you understand why it truly was the Cadillac of wrestling territories in the late 70s into the early 80s. And while it did fall off, we had the comeback with Dusty. And Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling lives in all professional wrestling today, whether it be WWE, New Japan, AEW, or Ring of Honor. There are touches of WCW deep in the DNA and in the fabric. So it's a great voyage that we love to take. It's my love letter back to pro wrestling. I love doing this show. I actually, in some ways, love doing Wrestling Observer Live too. But to be able to break away, to go back into the past, and to remember what made me a wrestling fan in the first place, those are the feels that we want to either give back to you as old wrestling fans or give to you as new wrestling fans, because it's the one thing that Brian Last over there, and I'm not saying that we don't do it at the figure four here, you know, too, but, you know, big into history. You know, everybody thinks of Jim Cornette. You know, put Jim Cornette to the side. John McAdam is the reason that a lot of you've seen his tapes, whether you have intended on doing it or not, on YouTube and a lot of other places. John McAdam, Robert Fuller, John Arezzi, you know, there's a lot of people over there doing shows, and you know, it caters to the wrestling fan of yore, but we love that stuff. So that's enough plugging right there. And hopefully we are going to be back very soon doing this show and hopefully talking about some good things that take place in these empty arenas.
Yes, definitely. And I think the plan will be to come back around the same time next week, and we'll have plenty to talk about with the shows coming up this weekend, the NOAH shows, the 2AW show, and we'll have be able to talk a little bit more about what's coming up with the All Japan shows the following week. So yeah, and by the way, sort of the same idea with Wrestling at Random. Like I said, it's or like you said, an opportunity to go back and watch wrestling from the past, wrestling that shows that maybe you wouldn't otherwise go back and watch. But when the randomizer pulls them up, you're like, oh yeah, I'll watch, you know, Clash of the Champions 21 from 1992 and see some stuff that's terrible, but also see some stuff that's great. And it's a fun journey too, because there's a little bit of overlap with this show on a lot of these, particularly I would imagine, you know, these WCW, some of even the WWF shows, you're going to have, you're going to have a guy like Kensuke Sasaki, appearing. So in any event, we should close it out for sure here. We will do another poll on Twitter coming up in the next few days, just as we did for this one, for randomly chosen matches from New Japan World. Make sure to follow us on Adam Mike or at Adam Mike Band. Vote on which match you want us to review, and the one that gets the most votes, or the two if it ends up being a tie again, we will review on that following week's show. So with that, Mike, it's time to shut it down.
It is indeed, and just be careful out there, everybody. As a PSA, if you are going to be doing polls, that you make sure that Judy Bagwell is nowhere near around you.